years ago you did an interview which may come back to haunt you. What, you know what I'm going to say, right?
No.
Okay. You did an interview in which you said, not the worst thing to slap a woman now and then. As I remember, you said you don't do it with a clenched fist. It's better to do it with an open hand. Mm. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't love that.
I haven't changed my opinion.
You haven't?
No. Not at all.
You think it's good to slap a woman?
No, I don't think it's good.
I don't think it's bad.
I don't think it's that bad. I think that it depends entirely on the circumstances and if it merits it. Yeah.
What would merit it?
Well, if you have tried everything else, and women are pretty good at this, they can't leave it alone. Yeah? They don't want to have the last word, and you give them the last word, but they're not happy with the last word. They want to say it again and get into a really provocative situation. Then I think it's absolutely right.
To give her a good slap?
Yeah, absolutely.
What if she gives you a good slap back?
Well, then you get into another area. I mean, then maybe she's getting to like it, and then it becomes something else. I don't know. But seriously, I think that it's the last resort. He's not going to do it because he wants to do it. Huh?
Wait till people see this interview. Are you going to get mail?
Might get some female.
Ladies and gentlemen, now it's Too Late with Alan Mosley. All right. Yeah. Jokes on her. What's up, guys? I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. Yeah. Yeah.
You did say I was muted.
I hear you.
You hear me?
Yeah.
Well, why can't they hear me?
I don't know. Can they hear me? Maybe Jay's muted.
Can y'all hear Dave? Hear you now. Okay. Somebody said, what happened to your face? I think they're talking about you, but Dave, I don't think they're talking about me. Dave, you look like you're 15 years old. Look at that. Look at that guy there.
I lose a couple years when I take the beard off. I just get sick of it, and then I'm ready for summer.
Getting ready for summer. When it's a sultry 65 up there in Pennsylvania.
I think it's like 40.
It was already 80 degrees here, Dave.
That's sick.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. Guys, topping tonight's news, former crypto entrepreneur Sam Bankman-Fried was sentenced to 25 years in prison for his $8 billion fraud scheme as CEO of FTX. Do we have a picture of Sam Bankman-Fried?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's him right there. They all look alike. I can't tell. Bankman-Fried expressed concern about what prison facility he would be sent to. As he said, his biggest worry now was whether or not he would be able to continue his vegan diet while behind bars.
Oh, wow.
You know, Dave, I'm kind of surprised that his biggest concern is staying vegan, because I would think that his biggest concern would be all the rape.
Oh.
Yeah. That's just me. I don't know. In science news, the robotics company LimX Dynamics unveiled its latest creation. Take a look at this guy right here. This bipedal robot can walk across any terrain, no matter how difficult. You can't knock it down, making travel into dangerous areas for robots more reliable than ever. Now, I got to say, that's pretty impressive. But how will it hold up against two logs suspended on ropes? that's what I thought.
That'll work out.
Oh, of course, the big news tonight, shocking news, as high calorie superstar Lizzo abruptly announced her retirement. Do we have a picture of Lizzo?
Yeah.
Oh, oh dear. Yeah. Have you, you ever heard of the story about the Cyclops from the Odyssey?
Oh.
Just let that marinade there. Okay. Listen to this, guys. The Round Mound of Sound said in a statement on Instagram, "I'm getting tired of putting up with being dragged by everyone in my life and on the internet. All I want is to make music and make people happy and help the world a little better than how I found it. But I'm starting to feel like the world doesn't want me in it. I'm constantly up against lies being told about me for clout and views, being the butt of the joke every single time because of how I look, my character being picked apart by people who don't know me and disrespecting my name. I didn't sign up for this. I quit."
Wow. Wow.
I know. Yeah. Those are pretty big words. I wonder what finally tipped the scales.
Oh.
Yeah, because stick a fork in her, she's done.
No.
She must have a heavy heart.
Oh, we're doing this. Okay.
I bet this news is tough for her fans to digest.
That was all right.
She should have exercised more discretion.
Okay. Yeah, we're...
What? Is it something I ate?
No, we're just running a little short of time.
Look, she's got bigger fish to fry, okay?
Okay, Alan.
She couldn't carry the weight of all that criticism.
Alan, we've got to keep going.
You think that's a generous portion of puns?
It... We need to stop.
What? What? We're just sitting here chewing the fat.
Okay. All right, please.
Dave, I could blubber on about this for days.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, okay, all right. Guys, let me tell you about tonight's sponsor, which is Fox & Sons Coffee, which you can find at foxandsons.com. If you use promo code ITL, you get 18% off orders, $25 or more. Shipping's always free on orders over $37.99 or more.
Nice.
You can visit their website at foxandsons.com. I actually have the Den Blend 2 Electric Boogaloo right here.
Ooh, that's a good blend.
Can I get a shot of that? Yeah.
Yeah.
This right here. It's a blend of our dark and light roasts for the perfect medium roast. Why do I have more facial hair than you? This is bullshit.
Yeah, isn't it crazy?
Chocolate, smoky, clean, with a floral hint. Yeah, yeah, this is chocolate flavored. Oh, that's why I love it so much. I love chocolate.
Chocolate flower.
So anyway, you can get that at Fox & Sons Coffee, which you can find at foxandsons.com. Use promo code. It's too late. Commercial break?
Yeah, we can do that.
Guys, we're going to be back with the meme of the week in the viewer mail right after this commercial break.
Don't go away.
Back to the show, everybody. Let me tell you about tonight's second sponsor, which is the Tennessee Hot Sauce Company, which you can find at tnhotsauceco.com. If you use promo code it's too late, all one word, it's too late, you get 10% off your entire order. I've actually got this right here. This is the poblano jalapeno, which if you look at the little diagram on the side, it's quite personable.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
sounds nice.
Yeah, it's nice to have some nice poblano jalapeno every now and then.
Yeah.
You get that at Tennessee Hot Sauce Company, tnhotsauceco.com. Promo code, it's too late. Hey, Dave.
Yes, Alan.
What time is it?
It's time for meme of the week.
Just fever. Oh no, fever.
I could neither confirm nor deny that's what would happen down here.
No.
Yeah. But we do have a bonus meme. Check out the bonus meme.
Can you check my depression level? You have 30 seconds to kill yourself.
Oh. Wow. That escalated.
Dave, I think tonight's fortune is for you.
Oh.
Yeah, this is your fortune. Are you ready?
Yeah.
You are soon going to change your present line of work. Yeah. So, yeah, might just want to.
Much.
Well, anyway, let's put that away. let's go ahead and answer some viewer mail. That's what it says. I'll take a picture. That's what it says.
Well, I believe.
The first question comes from Eric Eli, who writes, Dear Alan and Dave, who would have won in a fight between Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris?
Oh.
Now, I know people are talking about Enter the Dragon, but that's a movie. That's not real. In a real fight, Chuck Norris would win, and I'll tell you why. Because okay. there's weight classes for a reason.
Oh.
Yeah. Bruce Lee was a little dude. He's like 125 pounds. He'd be like a true flyweight.
A twisted steel.
I mean, Chuck Norris is actually not that big of a dude either, but he's got a lot more muscle mass than Bruce Lee. So Bruce Lee's Bruce Lee was something like 5'5", 125 pounds, dude. Oh, so
I wonder if I could take him.
Bruce Lee? Yeah, I mean, you just have to get him, you know? Yeah. Don't let him hit you and kick you. You just gotta, collapse on him. Give him the old Lizzo, you know? that'll do it. Okay. I don't recommend anyone giving anybody a Lizzo. So the answer is Chuck Norris. Jonathan Carranza writes, what is your favorite denomination of Christianity? Now, you're not restarting any religious wars on my show. Nice try, Jonathan. Ken Lovett writes, hi, Ken. Ken Lovett writes, Ken is one of my IRL friends who's known me since childhood. Yeah. That's why I ban him from the group so that he can't.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Okay, yeah. He came through for a little bit.
Ken Lovett writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what does truth smell like?
Oh, wow.
You know, this isn't really an answer to that, but do you ever, let me tell you, this is something that happened to me the other morning. I mentioned this to you the other day, but I didn't really explain it. Have you ever had this sensation before? Where you're just living life, right? You're just doing something somewhere. And whether it's a feeling in the air, a sound, a smell, whatever, but something like transports you back to a different time and place. And for like the briefest of moments, you're in that other place and it just totally washes over you. Have you ever had that sensation before?
Man, that sounds terrible. No, I mean,
wow.
I have regrets. Like every once in a while, I'll just be like, I'll think about something, but I'm never there.
I think it might say something about you that you assume that to be a negative feeling and it's a regretful feeling. It could have been like a previous happy time in life, but not for you. It was. Happy. Yeah.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. Dave, we'll talk after the show. Okay.
All right.
Aaron Kittner writes, Dear Alan and Dave, how many more winters will we have before we actually get spring this year? Yeah. So I told you we already had 80 degrees. We're back down to 53. So we're having another one.
Yeah.
So I think probably at least a couple more because April's not a hot month. April's,
no.
You know, wait till May. All right. Gary Dykstra writes, Dear Alan and Dave, which is more believable, the moon landing or Saudi Arabians did 9/11? I feel like Gary is still stuck on the gold standard from 4 years ago. Do you ever feel like that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like he doesn't, I don't think he's actually seen It's Too Late. He doesn't know what goes on during this ridiculous show, you know? All right. Andrew Avery writes, Dear Alan and Dave, should Trump name Stormy Daniels his vice presidential candidate? Who's more qualified to preside over vice? See, Andrew has seen the show.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you see, vice president. Yeah, he's presiding over. Yeah. Andrew, you've done better. Keith McQuarrie writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what are your opinions of those weird sensory deprivation tanks? Have you ever tried it or would you? I have not been in a sensory deprivation tank, no. But I don't think I would because I feel like if you once you're in there, then you like you start to think your thoughts and I.
Oh, you start to live your thoughts.
Oh, shoot.
Just like,
yeah,
I think you go there.
Yeah. I go through long stretches of the day where I don't remember anything. Yeah, I've told you this. I'm on the road, and I'll message you back 2 hours later saying I don't remember how I got here.
Yeah,
I was driving. Yeah,
and stopping and going.
Yeah,
getting out of your car.
I mean, the car's fine, so I assume you know I don't see any marks or anything.
No hair.
Yeah, there's no hair in the grill. Yeah. I mean, deer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happens.
Brooke Atkinson writes, Dear Anna Dave, my cousin had a baby, and it's been in question since the beginning of the pregnancy on whether the baby is his or not. Would betting on the inevitable outcome make me a bad person? No. I mean, she is from Kentucky, so it might be her baby, too, for all I know. Her and her cousin. But no, I mean,
wow.
Do you say that though? Like, I would never say Dave had a baby.
No,
like,
you know,
yeah, like Mary had the baby. You're, yeah you're the contributing member. Yeah, you contributed your member. Yeah, but I don't walk around saying that men have babies. So, because she said my cousin had a baby. And then said if the baby is his or not.
He acquired a baby.
Yeah. Acquired. No, that's what the gay couples do. They acquire babies. And they always pick male ones. Isn't that the strangest coincidence? Ryan, see, now I haven't seen it. It's too late. I'm stuck on the gold standard. Ryan Seifert writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what is your toxic trait? Oh, man. I have to always be right because I am. Oh, actually, you agree, do you?
No. There was like some public speaker I was listening to, and he's like, it's personality types, and one of them is you always have that friend that's always right, which is kind of nice because they usually are almost all the time. So, yeah, you are always right. I try too hard, I think. You know.
Yeah, you just gotta push yourself harder.
Calm down.
Yeah,
I think that'd be my toxic trait. Yeah, I work too hard.
Yeah. Yeah, he works too hard, Mr. 2,400 hours played in Car Mechanic Simulator. Sean Hatchie writes, Dear Alan and Dave, do you not like Peeps? No, dear God.
Nobody likes Peeps.
Yeah, nobody likes Peeps. Peeps is the horrors of capitalism on full display.
Yep.
Right? Yeah.
Unregulated capitalism.
Yeah.
Let that happen.
The unbridled free market has brought us to this hellscape where we have Peeps. All right. And finally this evening, Mary Lynn Wilimowski writes, Dear Alan.
Oh.
Dave.
I didn't see this one.
Why is it that cleaning up after sick kids is a mom job? Why can't dads take turns just like with changing diapers?
I'm supposed to change diapers too?
Well, not anymore.
I guess, yeah.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, I could help, but
go ahead.
But if you ask me to, I would help. If you don't ask me, I'm not gonna.
So she's not communicating well. Is that what you? So it's her fault.
Yeah.
Have you tried giving her a good slap?
The last resort. We haven't gotten to that yet.
Okay, guys, we're gonna be back with Dave DeCamp from Antiwar.com. Right after this commercial break.
How much?
69 cents.
And the gas?
Can I ask what pronouns you go by?
What pronouns would that be?
It's 2023, so...
What business is it of yours? What my gender is? Friendo?
I didn't mean nothing by it.
It didn't mean nothing.
I just didn't want to assume your gender. If you don't want to accept that, I don't know what else I can do for you. Might it be something else.
I don't know. Will there?
Is something wrong?
With what?
With anything.
Is that what you're asking me? Is there something wrong with anything?
Will there be anything else?
You already asked me that.
Well, I need to go to a genderqueer protest.
Genderqueer protest?
Yes, sir.
What time do you protest?
Now. It starts now.
Now is not a time. What time do you protest?
Generally around dark, at dark.
You don't know what you're talking about, do you?
Sir?
I said, you don't know what you're talking about. How many genders are there?
Sir?
You're a bit deaf, aren't you? I said, how many genders are there?
Oh. Somewhere around 930. I'd say around 930.
Are you mentally ill?
Why would you be saying that? You'd get canceled.
Don't give a shit.
Well, I got to close now.
You live in that house out back?
Yes, I do.
You lived here all your life?
This is my trans wife's place, originally.
You married a dude?
We referred to them as women for many years. About 4 years ago.
You married a dude?
That's the way you want to put it.
Well, I don't have somewhere to put it. That's the way it is.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Our guest this evening is the news editor of antiwar.com and the host of Anti-War News. You can find his and many others' excellent content at antiwar.com. Dave DeCamp, welcome to the show.
Hey, Alan, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. I'm surprised it's taken me this long to get you on the show because I've followed you for a long time. I've read a ton of your articles and lots of people associated with the Institute and with antiwar.com. So I want to jump right into it with some of the current events in foreign policy news. This just from the last few days at the time of this recording. The Iran consulate in Damascus was bombed. And I know that this was something that you covered very recently. So I want you to give the audience some thoughts on this for people who don't really know the details or are just hearing about this for the first time and why this is a little bit different than hitting just a regular old military target.
Yeah, I mean, so this was a huge escalation of Israel's air campaign in Syria. So a lot of people might not be aware of the fact that Israel has been, they regularly bomb Syria. They've been doing this for years. And they have a very ambiguous policy about it. They don't always talk about it or take credit for, each airstrike that they launch. But this has really ramped up since October 7th, and they've been targeting Iranians. They've been targeting members of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is the IRGC, their, elite military unit. And they've killed a handful of their guys over the past few months. But on Monday, they really stepped things up because they bombed an Iranian consulate building right next to the Iranian embassy. So it was an attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus. And I mean, you're not supposed to bomb embassies. This is like just such a, we talk about international law. International law kind of in some ways doesn't really mean much. But when it comes to attacks on diplomatic facilities, I mean, that's one thing that most countries, just about every state in the world, that's a norm that they would not violate. The U.S. bombed the Chinese embassy in Belgrade during the Kosovo war, but they, profusely apologized for it, even though there was some indication it might not have been an accident. But this is just goes to show kind of what a rogue state Israel is. You know, at the same time they're committing this horrific, these horrific atrocities in Gaza, they've been ramping up their attacks on Syria. And here they go and they bomb this consulate. Now, they killed seven members of the IRGC, so seven Iranians, including their senior commander of the Quds force, which this is the highest level Iranian military officer to be killed since the U.S. drone striked Qasem Soleimani in January 2020, who was the head of the IRGC's Quds force at the time. And the Quds force is basically responsible for coordinating with Hezbollah and the Iraqi Shia militias, you know, Iran's allies in the region. So this is a huge deal. And it's clear to me, it's been clear for a while with Israel's airstrikes in Syria as well as Lebanon. They've been really hitting deep inside Lebanon, that they're trying to provoke, you know, a major regional war here because they want the U.S. to directly intervene. They want to get the U.S. It's very clear, and this isn't just me saying this. There's been all these reports over the past few months quoting U.S. officials saying that they think Israel is trying to provoke a full-blown war in Lebanon. And, you know, the ultimate goal, I think, is that they want the U.S. to get directly involved to bail them out. Because Israel, the U.S. and Israeli intelligence has said this, that they can't really handle a full-blown war with Hezbollah and continue what they're doing in Gaza. So this is what we're dealing with here. And you see the U.S. is already kind of downplaying this. But it's just, you know, Iran saying they're going to respond. And the question is, what is Iran going to do? And then the Shia militias could start attacking the U.S. again, because Iran actually told them to stop after three U.S. troops were killed in Jordan recently. So the whole thing is just a disaster. And it just shows how this whole relationship with Israel is just completely against any sort of U.S. You know, if the U.S. has any interests in the Middle East, supporting Israel certainly goes against all of them.
Well, it's interesting talking about the concept of Israel trying to pull Iran into an open, a hot war in the region, a direct confrontation. Of course, I know different people have different opinions on the Afghanistan withdrawal, the United States' withdrawal, and how that was handled and all that BS. I don't typically get too much into that because I usually point to, well, if you look at the surveys and the data, Americans on net were tired of conflicts in the Middle East, were ready for the troops to come home, Iraq, Afghanistan, whatever. So it seems a bit kind of getting the cart before the horse for Israel to say, well, you know, our goal here is that, well, if we start a war with Iran, which I know that there's been lots of people, there's been lots of neocons, let's call them what they are. There's been lots of neocons that have been wanting a war with Iran for decades at this point. But do the American people, are they ready to go into another large scale engagement in the Middle East, having just retired an engagement in the Middle East?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at all the polling, and, you know, polls are, you know, you only can learn so much from polls, but we've seen consistently that in all these polls, when they ask Americans if, you know, what do they think about what's happening in Gaza, and the overwhelming majority of people are saying that they think the U.S. should push for a permanent ceasefire, which goes to show that it doesn't seem like they would be interested in getting involved in this. But, you know, the switch can flip pretty quick. If Americans end up getting killed again in some sort of attack, I think that they could always, you know, turn up the war propaganda to get enough people on board. But it does seem like, especially with what's happening in Gaza and Israel, that more and more people that I wouldn't expect to be speaking against Israel, you know, in the U.S., you know, people in the media and stuff, we're starting to see a lot of people turn on Israel because of all the horrific things that are coming out of Gaza. So, yeah, it's just amazing. You know, I mean, I do this every day for antiwar.com and follow this stuff. And I'm still just blown away that we've gotten to this point, that things are as bad as they are right now when it comes to this situation in the Middle East, because you see Biden, like, politically with this election coming up, this isn't not doing him any favors, but he's still all in supporting Israel no matter what, completely unconditional military aid, approving all these bomb shipments and fighter jet shipments. I keep thinking something's got to give here, but
sure. Yeah.
They just keep going full steam ahead. And yeah, this could provoke another big war in the Middle East that the U.S. would be involved in.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the Biden angle. You know, excuse me for getting a little political here, but it really says something about sort of the disconnect. You know, I'm 38 years old. You know, the whole Israel's our greatest ally BS and America being involved in the Middle East. I mean, that's been my whole life. That's my entire lifetime. And despite that, and it is true, I agree with you that while like the state-sponsored media, the regime narrative still is exactly that. But I think that if you look at independent media, if you look at even some semi, you know, serious, what you call mainstream news sources, definitely social media, that it's becoming a lot more safe. The Overton window has shifted to where open criticism of Israel and saying, well, wait a minute, I don't think it's in our national interest to be involved in these activities. That's becoming a more openly acceptable viewpoint, whereas I feel, at least in my opinion, not that long ago, I mean, you would just be shouted down from all sides. And yet, at the same time, as we sit here, you have Joe Biden. It is an election year after all, who has signaled nothing but unconditional support for Israel. I mean, let's face it, we live in a two-party system. So you got Donald Trump, which has never led me to believe he would have anything but unconditional support for Israel. And just in case you are one of those third-party people, you have RFK Jr., who's basically his entire platform was, I'm better on COVID. And what does he do? He signals absolutely unwavering support for Israel. Dave, how shocked are you by this revelation?
Yeah, the RFK Jr. thing, man, is really something else, because I was a little excited at first when he announced he was running, because he was good on COVID. And one thing he was focusing on when he first announced was Ukraine, and he was very good on it. And you could tell the way that he talked about it, he actually knew, you know, he was actually pretty informed on it. He actually shared a few of, you know, antiwar.com articles on Twitter and stuff. And we were like, yeah, this is great. But then as Israel stuff happens and, you know, he's completely on board and completely justifying this mass murder campaign that's happening in Gaza, which at this point you can't really call it anything else. And it's just all his sensibilities just go out the window. All of his logic is just gone when he's talking about Israel. And it's just a shame. So, yeah, the third party, the supposedly, you know, independent candidate is just as bad. Trump did say some interesting things the other day. He was asked about in some interview, I think it was with Israel Hayom, which is a Israeli paper, was asked about certain things related to Israel and Gaza. And he was asked, oh, what will you do about this rising wave of anti-Semitism? And his response was like, was that, oh, well, that's happening because of what you're doing in Gaza. And if you read the interview, he's not saying it like that Israel shouldn't be doing it. What he's saying is they shouldn't be publishing these pictures and videos of it, because that's turning world opinion on Israel. It's like, you got to finish it up quick, get it done. And he's, you know, in the same interview, he's saying that he would have done the same thing if he was in Israel's position. So he's not saying that he doesn't support Israel, but what he said was still pretty interesting, that the public opinion is turning because of what you're doing and what you're showing the world.
Sure.
And that's the thing, you know, I appreciate about Trump. Another thing he said in the interview, he was asked about the Democrats not supporting Israel, even though it's realistically, it's only a very small number of Democrats who are speaking out about this. But he said, you know, he said something like, you know, 15 years ago, if you spoke out against Israel and you're in Congress, that would be the end of your political career. And he said, now it's not the case. And he was saying it's a bad thing that that's changed. But yeah, it's just amazing that he says those things, you know?
Well, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. I saw somebody, I can't take credit for this, I saw somebody say recently that the videos and pictures that the IDF is gleefully publishing would put Julian Assange to shame. Like, you know, that was Assange was doing journalism to unveil these war crimes by the empire. Israel is perfectly happy for you to see the fruits of their labor. And it really says something about the mindset and the activity of what's going on there. I did want to ask you a couple of really kind of open ended questions before we take our first break. Let me paint this picture for you. So if you were to only listen to Israel sympathizers, one of the big talking points you always get is that, of course, Israel is just surrounded by enemies. They all want Israel dead. They're under attack 24/7, 365, of course, by no fault of their own, mind you. Let me put that in there. To what extent is that a true statement versus their neighbors are actually the ones under attack 24/7, 365 by Israel?
Well, yeah, especially, you know, in just looking at recent history, you know, Israel, again, is constantly bombing Syria and they keep Gaza under blockade. And there's all this violence and basically slow de facto annexation of the West Bank through the expansion of settlements. And if you actually look at the situation, the Arab countries, the other Arab countries in the region, even Jordan and Egypt, they're not threatening to attack Israel. They're basically in on the whole thing. That's why they also get billions of dollars worth of military aid from the U.S. each year. Those are arrangements from them signing peace treaties with Israel decades ago. So the Arab leadership, even especially in the Gulf countries, they started signing these normalization deals with Israel. And the stance had always been, you know, we won't normalize relations with Israel until they give the Palestinians a state. Well, that didn't happen, and they were going ahead with it anyway. So really, the Arab countries, you know, have not been threatening to attack Israel. With Lebanon, you know, that's a whole nother story. But even that in recent years, I mean, Israel is the one that invaded Lebanon in its wars there. So it's not really true. And of course, that goes back to the 67 war and the Yom Kippur War and things, you know, back then. And even then, you know, if you look at the founding of Israel, the Arab nations in the surrounding areas did not intervene until Israel really started driving Palestinians out and they were getting, you know, floods of refugees across their borders. You know, the narrative that Israel is constantly under threat of attack just isn't true. They're under, you know, threat of some rocket attacks from Gaza because they have kept it under this military blockade. But now, I mean, without the U.S., like, you see the region is really turning on Israel. The whole world is turning on Israel in Jordan because Jordan is an interesting case because, like, about half the population is Palestinian refugees. And this has really put, you know, highlighted Jordan's military relationship with the U.S. And there's been huge protests around the Israeli embassy in Amman. So the people there are really unhappy about it. I mean, that could turn into something, you know, and then, you know, King Abdullah, you know, his interest is kind of balancing this relationship with the U.S., but still trying to keep the Palestinians happy. So he's in a tight spot right now. But yeah, again, they're in on it. And this is another thing you hear is like, oh, you know, it's not just Israel blockading Gaza. Egypt is also does it as well, like as if because the Egyptians are, you know, not nice to the Palestinians, too, that somehow justifies what Israel's doing. You know, Egypt, again, has been it's a total, especially now with Sisi, total U.S. puppet state. So, you know, this idea that they would face some major allied Arab attack. I mean, the problem that the Arabs have always had is that they're unable to unite together. So that's just not a false talking point. Although now, as things turn, say the U.S. ditches Israel, say by some miracle that happens, then they might be in trouble with Hezbollah and Iran and Syria if they can get together, because that's what they call, you know, the axis of resistance, kind of the Shia axis in the region could be a threat if they didn't have the U.S. in their corner. Although at the same time, we have to always remember that Israel has nukes. They have a secret nuclear weapon stockpile. So that's always a threat that they can hold over.
Well, I think because you've used the phrase of Israel being a rogue state when you look at the actions that they take, when you look at some of the pushback from the international community. You mentioned international law and you already beat me to the punch. I was actually planning on saying later in the show that what's international law? There's no such thing as international law, because if you can do whatever you want and then there's no consequences, then obviously there's no such thing. But with all that said, so we've talked about Iran, we've talked about Lebanon. We've talked about, you know, now Jordan and Egypt may be essentially in on it, but there are people in the region that are not happy with what's going on, whether it's serving their own self-interest or whether it's genuine sympathy for Palestinians. I don't necessarily conflate the two. We talked about, obviously, bombing in Syria. Is there a likelihood that there actually would be a large coalition force put together that would attack Israel in the future precisely because of the way Israel continues to conduct itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's possible. At the same time, you know, you still see that the Arab countries, specifically talking more about the Gulf state, you know, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, they don't seem like they have really any interest in getting involved in this thing. Again, I think the force that they might have to worry about is Iran, Hezbollah, even the Houthis in Yemen now. And they certainly could do something, but that, and Egypt and Jordan, I mean, it would have to be big changes there in the leadership, but you know, it's possible again, if the US ditches them and if the US does cut off Israel, Israel's going to have to change its behavior because they're not going to be able to get away with everything that they're doing.
Well, one more quick one before we take our first break. The other obviously huge talking point post October 7th would be the whole situation with the hostages and hostage negotiations. I mean, that's been something that's been difficult for me to keep up with because there'll be an article or a tweet one day saying, well, such and such negotiation is taking place. The next day it's, oh, well, Israel's delegation walked out and there's no negotiations. But with the extent of the atrocities that are going on, with the amount of killing that's taking place, I dare not say the phrase of the bad blood being built because I'm pretty sure that already existed. Do you think that the campaign as it currently exists in Gaza would genuinely come to an end the next day if all the hostages were released, or are we beyond that?
No, I mean, Netanyahu has said that his goal is to, you know, how does he put it? Eradicate Hamas. The hostage thing, that's a talking point you hear from Israel supporters online is that, oh, if Hamas just releases the hostages, this thing is over. But
sure.
That's not even what Israel has been saying. So, yeah, there's no reason to believe that. And if you look at what Hamas has been offering, it is tough to really know what's going on behind the scenes. But Hamas has been saying that they'll release all the hostages in exchange for a permanent ceasefire. That's what they've offered. Now, they also want Israel to release a lot of Palestinian prisoners in exchange. But that, you know, this is something that they've been offering for a while now as a long-term deal, and Israel has shown no interest in that. They keep saying, you know, if there is a hostage deal, that it's only going to be a temporary ceasefire. And the Israeli hostages are dying. There's about 113, I believe, still in Gaza, and I just saw a report from Haaretz the other day that Israel thinks that only 60 to 70 are alive right now. If you really care about the hostages, you're not going to be bombing Gaza the way that Israel is, or blockading it the way that they are. So that's not what this is about. And when it comes to Netanyahu's goal, I mean, Hamas is not going anywhere. There's no sign that Israel has really infiltrated their tunnel system, which is huge. You know, we're talking hundreds of miles of tunnels under Gaza where they can go hide out while Israel's dropping all these bombs. So, you know, and you look at just counterterrorism in general, like if you're killing all these civilians, you're wiping out entire families. The people who survive, you know, they're not going to become moderates, you know?
Sure.
So, and this is something, I mean, it's just so ridiculous because we've seen U.S. officials, U.S. military officials say this publicly, that they probably can't defeat Hamas completely, that killing all these civilians is going to be a recruiting tool for Hamas, yet the U.S. is still supporting this thing, you know, completely, even though they don't think the goal is realistic.
Well, we'll put a quick pin in the civilians aspect of it. Dave, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more from Dave DeCamp of antiwar.com right after this commercial break. Don't go away. It's Too Late with Alan Mosley is proudly supported by Fox & Sons Coffee. Fans of It's Too Late use code ITL and receive 18% off orders of $25 or more. Shipping's always free on orders over $37.99. So get yours today at their website, which is www.foxandsons.com. It's www.foxandsons.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are still joined by our friend Dave DeCamp from antiwar.com. Dave, something that's kind of fresher in the news that we were talking about really briefly before we went on. What's the story of this bombing of foreign aid workers from the World Central Kitchen?
Yeah, so this is a really, this story kind of broke last night that these aid workers from this, you know, foreign aid, you know, kind of global NGO that delivers aid around the country based. I know the guy who's in charge of it is Spanish, but this is really kind of just shows how brutal this Israeli campaign in Gaza is and how they are specifically targeting aid shipments as part of a starvation campaign. So Israel is claiming it was a tragic accident. They killed a total of 7 of these foreign, they weren't all foreigners, but they killed a total of 7 of these aid workers. And that included a dual U.S.-Canadian citizen, a citizen of the U.K., an Australian, and I believe one was from Poland. Mm-hmm. So I just read before we recorded this, basically the official story coming out of Israel, and this was reported in Haaretz, was that basically these aid workers were in 3 different vehicles and they were bringing some aid to a warehouse. And Israel is claiming that there was an armed individual with them that they thought might have been Hamas. No, and it's clear from the way that this is written that there was no evidence that it was Hamas. It was probably, who knows, maybe it could have been Hamas, but it could have just been somebody guarding the aid shipment because they've been getting looted because of the desperate situation in Gaza. And Israel has been targeting the police in Gaza who have been responsible for the security. They've been killing them. So the fact that there's an armed individual with an aid shipment is not a surprise. And then apparently this armed individual stayed at the warehouse and then the 3 vehicles wow. left and one got hit with a drone strike. And then they took injured people out of that car into a second car. And then that car got hit with the drone strike. And then the people from there went into the 3rd car and then that car got hit until they were all dead. So how is that an accident? I mean, it's, and again, this is the, basically the official story coming from Israel was that this is what happened. And they said, oh, they thought that the armed guy was there. Well, even if he was, these are clearly marked aid vehicles. I mean, it's just, you know, again, this stuff is starting to come out and it's just hard for the Israel supporters to figure out how to justify these things. I mean, you know, it's just it sounded like a calculated killing of aid workers. I don't see how this is anything else. I mean, they can see with the drones what they're hitting, and they're hitting aid trucks. And oh, another big thing is that these aid workers told IDF where they were going to be. They got the okay to travel on these roads, and they were still killed.
Wow. Well, that's you talked about that. So that's the official narrative coming out of Israel that this is a tragic accident. Let me play you a clip from retired Rear Admiral John Kirby, who's currently serving as the White House Secretary of Communications Advisor. So let's get the story straight from the State Department.
Your question presumes at this very early hour that it was a deliberate strike, that they knew exactly what they were hitting, that they were hitting aid workers and did it on purpose. And there's no evidence of that. I would also remind you, sir, that we continue to look at incidents as they occur. The State Department has a process in place. And to date, as you and I are speaking, they have not found any incidents where the Israelis have violated international humanitarian law. And lest you think we don't take it seriously, I can assure you that we do. We look at this in real time.
They have never violated international humanitarian law ever in the past 5 to 6 months.
I'm telling you, the State Department has looked at incidents in the past and has yet to determine that any of those incidents violate international humanitarian law.
Go ahead. That's right, Dave. So the people who brag about how accurate their strikes are saying that this was a tragic accident. But not only that, the State Department can't find a single instance in the last 6 months of such an atrocity being committed.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Like it's just such a joke. I mean, I don't even really know what to say about it. And this is something, you know, what he was talking about was, because of some pressure from a handful of Democrats who want the U.S. to cut Israel off, Biden started, you know, issued this new like national security memorandum that said that they have to get assurances from countries that they give military aid to that they're not violating international law or U.S. foreign assistance laws. So they got these assurances from Israel and the State Department signed off on them and said, OK, yeah, no violations of law that we found. Which, again, it's just a complete joke. I mean, all the things that we've seen, videos. Recently, there was a video of a drone strike which sounded similar to the one that happened to these aid workers. You see four unarmed Palestinian men walking in an open area. Drone strike hits them. Two die instantly. One is trying to get away. Drone strike kills him. The other one is literally crawling away on his hands and knees when the third drone strike kills him. And we've seen countless videos of stuff like this. And so it's just, I mean, it just goes to show what hypocrites they are, because they spent the last few years lecturing Russia about what they're doing in Ukraine. And now here the whole entire world can see these atrocities and war crimes being committed by Israel with full U.S. support, with U.S. weapons. And they act like, and the smugness from Kirby. I mean, Kirby, you know, he's going to go down in history as you know, I hate everybody compares everything to Nazi Germany and the Holocaust, but you know, if the ICJ rules this thing a genocide and this goes down in history as a genocide, then Kirby and the State Department spokesman, Matt Miller, they're going to be, you know, the Goebbels of our era, the propaganda ministers. The fact that they go out there with a straight face and say these things, I mean, how much do they get paid? Is a spokesman, you know, do they really make that much money that this is worth it? Or they think they're going to get to the next level in the government in the next Democrat administration or something? I don't know how these guys sleep at night.
Well, one thing I think, again, it's you hope, I'd like to say you're seeing it, but you hope to see a groundswell of resistance to is, so you talked about whether it's Spaniards, British national, and American. Of course, Americans have been killed in the Middle East before, and I don't mean soldiers, and journalists, in fact. You talk about the Polish national, the Australian national. It's a similar sort of concept. Again, we talked really briefly about Julian Assange. It's a similar concept where some people would wonder out loud, well, why isn't the Australian government doing more to help Julian Assange? That's their citizen. Why is he? Why are neocons in America calling Julian Assange a traitor? A traitor to what? He's not an American citizen. I don't know who he's committing treason against. Would you like to see, or do we not see, more nations around the world saying, oh, hey, wait a minute. Obviously, us just being our unconditional support to the West, to the United States, we have to start putting conditions on these things, because what am I going to say on our national TV, to our national news media, when a reporter asks me, well, hey, our sovereign citizens just got murdered by a foreign government. What are you going to do about that? What do you have to say about that? Is there any outrage at all, or is it just, oh, well, they shouldn't have been there? What's the phrase here? Oh, war is hell. These things happen.
Yeah, well, I think from those other countries, you know, the U.S. is really on its own here in supporting Israel. We saw Canada recently said that they were suspending arms sales to Israel. Now, Canada barely, you know, they don't sell much to Israel. It's not really going to make much of an impact, but that's something. And I know the UK has historically been very supportive of Israel, but in the parliament, there's been a pretty serious effort to cut off Israeli arms to Israel. And Australia, you know, I don't know too much about their relationship with Israel. I know all these countries, though, have been voting against Israel at the UN. The UK recently voted for a ceasefire resolution. I know Australia voted at there's a General Assembly resolution. So again, this is, the US is just really out on its own here. And this is kind of the way it's always been, you know, in European countries, the conversation about Israel is very different than it is in the US. Now it's changing, I think, pretty radically in the US, but this idea of just unconditionally supporting Israel, that's not something you find around the world, even in other Western countries. So I think, you know, this is, of course, going to increase the anger at Israel in these countries where, you know, one of their citizens was killed trying to get aid to people who are starving.
Well, on that note, I know we're starting to run a little bit short on time. I wanted to take a brief moment to talk a little bit about the political angle, but I mean more the political angle within Israel rather than the political angle in the United States. And I'll set it up this way. So I had mentioned earlier, you know, I remember being a kid, or I'll put it this way. A lot of times when you hear people talk about Russia and they talk about Vladimir Putin, right? And they talk about how, well, he's the president, but really he's a dictator because he's been in power for forever. All the elections are a sham, yada, yada, yada. Okay. Well, I mean, I remember being a young kid, Dave, and this guy named Benjamin Netanyahu becomes prime minister of Israel. You want to talk about a guy being in power forever. Benjamin Netanyahu seems to have been at the reins in some capacity in Israel for a long, for basically our entire adult lives. I mean, for sure. And more than that. So what's the difference there? What's the difference between Putin and Benjamin Netanyahu?
Well, Israel's the greatest democracy in the Middle East. Didn't you know that?
Oh, okay. Oh yeah. Well, thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, Netanyahu always finds a way to survive. And one of the reasons why we've seen things get so bad in Israel just in very recent years is because, you know, he was out for just a couple years, I think, in 2021. And then he won the election at the end of and came into office at the end of 2022 with this new coalition government that includes basically the most extreme, you know, about as extreme as you can get in Israeli politics when it comes to the Palestinians. The people that he formed his coalition with are, you know, includes settlers who live in the West Bank, who explicitly want to annex the West Bank, kick all the Palestinians out, who support openly have supported Israeli terrorist attacks against Palestinians in the past. And these are the people, the guy Itamar Ben-Gvir is in charge of Netanyahu's police force, and you have this guy Bezalel Smotrich, who again has basically drew up a plan to annex the whole West Bank and kick all the Palestinians out a few years ago. Well, now he's the Israeli minister in charge of the West Bank in this new position, and this, of course, all played into the things that caused the Hamas attack. But that's kind of Netanyahu's allying with, you know, whoever he can, kind of to stay in power. The Israeli democracy, the voting, you know, it's very messy. There's all these different factions and political parties, and they held like four separate elections a few years ago, which was ended with Netanyahu not being in power for the first time in a while. So it's just a matter of him kind of doing whatever it takes to survive politically. And he's always been very extreme in the sense. Maybe not extreme in this sense. You know, there's been this narrative for so long that, oh man, if those Palestinians weren't so crazy, they could have gotten their state, you know, years ago, and they could have accepted this two-state solution that Israel so generously offered them. When that's not really the case, there was never really a concrete deal on the table, and now you've had Netanyahu just recently start bragging that I am the reason that there's no Palestinian state. And this is something he opposed when he first came up in the 90s. That was, you know, he was basically there to stop the peace process. And he's continued that, you know, throughout his time in power in Israel.
Well, we'll wrap up on this. Hopefully this will leave a white pill moment for the audience, but I don't know, cause I don't know what you're going to say. In the same way that we look at polls, and you're right, you know, you can only get so much from opinion polls, but the same way that we look at polls and people have a bad taste in their mouth with what they're seeing coming out of the Middle East right now. And in general, certainly Americans are tired of the military being involved in the Middle East, and they were ready for Iraq to be over, ready for Afghanistan to be over. Is there a similar groundswell in Israel to depose Netanyahu in the next election cycle and to try to bring some sense of normalcy back and not just the constant warfare with their neighbors? Or is, because I've heard people write and talk about how, well, maybe Israel does some of the things that they're doing because he's essentially trying to save his political career. I mean, is there genuinely a swell within Israel to put a stop to this, or does he actually have a firm mandate of the majority of the population?
Well, there's a lot of opposition to Netanyahu. That is true. And he was facing a political crisis before all this with this judicial overhaul that his government was trying to do, which would basically take the power away from Israel's Supreme Court. But so that is real. But the majority, again, with the polls, the majority of Israelis support the war in Gaza, the genocidal war in Gaza. So they're all on board with that. And you see the opposition is in support of what's happening. And, you know, they would do things, I think, to try to placate public opinion a little more. Yair Lapid, who was the prime minister for a little while, he's kind of the main opposition force right now, and Benny Gantz, but they're still all supportive of what's happening in Gaza. And Benny Gantz has been the one, he was threatening, you know, they're talking about invading Rafah, which is sort of the last refuge for Palestinians in Gaza. It's the city on the Egyptian border that's packed with millions of Palestinians who have nowhere to go, living and sheltering on the streets. And Benny Gantz has been, you know, saying that they're going to invade it no matter what. So, there's opposition to Netanyahu, but still, for the most part, the majority of Israelis support what's happening in Gaza. Now, with Netanyahu is kind of particularly reckless, I think, when it comes to provoking a bigger war. I think maybe these guys might be a little more careful about that. But so maybe that's something we could hope, you know, maybe a little hope there. But
so what you're telling me is that the Israelis can choose between Joe Biden, Donald Trump, or mm-hmm. RFK Jr. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
All right. Well, on that note, Dave, where can people go to support you and get more of your content?
Yeah, so all my writing is at antiwar.com. I'm the news editor, so basically what I do is just sort through kind of hundreds of news stories each day and then write a few that I think are the most important ones to give people the proper context and you know, take the propaganda out of them. Sure. So news.antiwar.com, you can find all my articles there. Follow me on Twitter. I also do a daily podcast 5 days a week called Anti-War News with Dave DeCamp. It's on YouTube, or you could just listen to the podcast.
Well, Dave, on that note, we got one more question for you. Are you ready for the bonus round?
Sure.
All right. Now, let's say, for instance, you've got a bowl of nachos. And in your nachos, you've got your chips in there, and you've got your lettuce, and you've got your ground beef. Maybe you got some peppers, some onions, what have you. Now, say you have a bowl of salad, and you've got your croutons and your bacon bits. You know, maybe you've got some chicken in there. Maybe you've got some lettuce or onions or peppers. Are nachos a salad?
I would say no. I would say they're nachos.
Oh, sorry to hear that, Dave. Nachos are, of course, a salad. It is a healthy treat. I'm advising all of our audience members, if you're trying to cut back, just go get yourself a nacho salad.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
a nacho salad.
Yeah, I'm kind of jonesing for one myself. Dave, thanks so much for being on the show, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was good to be here.
Guys, we're going to be back to wrap up right after this commercial break. Don't go away.
If you're enjoying tonight's show, consider supporting the program by becoming a member of our Patreon. That's over at patreon.com/AlanMosley.
What the hell was that? Like our Facebook page, facebook.com/AlanMosleyTV. Dave, you have not been on point tonight. You can join us on Twitter. It's twitter.com/AlanMosleyTV. First, there was the bullshit with the mute in the beginning, but you can subscribe to us on YouTube. It's youtube.com/AlanMosleyTV. You know, I said to you earlier this week you were due for a clunker, and it was tonight, but that's okay because people can listen to it on Spotify. Thanks. It's Too Late, Alan Mosley, or Alan Mosley TV. Also, don't forget to get your tickets to the 6th Annual It's Too Late Live Show, Saturday, May 18th. You can tell Dave in person what a fucking asshole he is.
Get my performance review during the promos.
Yeah. Tim Weissong says, I'm going to call it a nacho salad from now on. I know. Can you believe that Dave DeCamp missed the bonus round? Hate to hear that.
That's too bad. He was cool. Now he can't come back on again.
Yeah, right? And here I was going to donate $1 million to antiwar.com. But now, I have to just engage in more self-loathing instead.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, do you have a final thought?
Man, those Middle Eastern people, they just need to get along. That's crazy. They need to cut it out. Stop that.
Yeah. Or what? That's the problem right there.
Just keep doing it.
quick after party. Just
really quick. Yeah.
All right.
Got school in the morning.
Yeah. Is this week not over yet? Jesus Christ.
One way or another.
Yeah. This after party is going to be a little dark, I think. I just feel it. I don't know. Guys, thank you so much for watching another episode of It's Too Late, and we will see you next week.
Ugh.
Brian's being a little racist in chat, but that's okay.
Oh. Okay, yeah, he is. All right. I mean, mustaches, that's bold.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they wear those things, so that you can only see their eyes and not their... Yeah.
That's how they keep the...
Mm-hmm.
The lineage going. Or something.